keep it loose, keep it clean, fellas. Like I said, we're playing with house money now. Let's talk about anything. The first thing that's on my mind is last night I remembered, and I mentioned this briefly, but I remembered last night that there was a movie from the 90s where Bruce Willis protects an autistic kid from the NSA called Mercury Rising. And yeah. Matt, you told
me... Alec Baldwin.
Yeah, yeah. Alec Baldwin is the bad guy, and it's a movie about an autistic boy called Mercury Rising, which I thought was funny,
yep.
But not as funny as what you told me the source material it's based on was called.
I remember as a kid, because I was a fucking dorky-ass, I guess, theater queer would be the best word for it. I had a subscription to Entertainment Weekly, and I remember reading an article about the bidding war for this book. It's one of those books that came out in the 90s, and... like, before it was published, there was a bidding war for its movie rights. And it was about a, like, a 60-year-old black cop who has to protect this autistic kid who cracked an NSA code that was, like, put into
Sudoku or something.
Newspaper or something. Yeah, a Sudoku thing. And, like, nobody was supposed to be able to crack it, but this autistic kid was able to. And the book was called Simple Simon. The kid's name was Simon.
They totally
and somewhere along the line, people realized, no, that might get people upset. But there's like two things going on. Like, they got more politically correct by changing the name, but then they got less politically correct by whitewashing the main character. They totally whitewashed him. He was a black guy in the book. I mean, it was a hack work. The book is a piece of shit. From what I understand, it's like a guy ripping off James Patterson, basically, in his Alex Cross books. But still, fucked up.
But, like, that would have been cool, though, if they put Danny Glover in it, and he was Danny Glover from Lethal Weapon, and he's just hanging out with this Spectrum kid. And he's like, Yoshi is a girl? I ain't got time for this shit. I ain't got time to go down to the train tracks and record you riding in an Otis elevator. I'm too old for this shit. This is the craziest partner I've ever had. He won't let me ride in a Tyson Krupp.
That's sort of like what happened in the original Lethal Weapon. Because, like, you know, Danny Glover gets partnered with Mel Gibson, the crazy cop. And then, like, he proceeds to, like, try to kill himself twice in about a 12-hour period. And then they have dinner and beers together, and, like, everything's okay. And he's like, oh, this violently
it
unstable
gives him something
man
to
I'm
live
partnered
for.
With.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Maybe, like, Mel Gibson in Lethal Weapon was also autistic. Like,
yeah,
he was also Spectrum. Yeah, and he...
Well, he was a gut... He was like a Spectrum assassin. He gives this little speech about how he was, like, an 18-year-old kid in the Vietnam War, and how he shot some guy in Laos from, like, 1,000 yards, and he says... there's only three men in the world that could have made that shot. So, yeah, he's basically like an autist assassin.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's like how his wife died before the first movie. They were going to record trains. She fell onto the track.
Back to Mercury Rising. I guess my just idea about that is this is a movie that came out too early. It should have happened now so that, like, Twitter could experience a joy of Bruce Willis and an autistic child, and not that Sixth Sense autistic child.
Yeah, no, it would have been amazing. It would have given an entire generation a hero that they could look up to, even though he was
absolutely.
11.
Yeah. Ho, 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 I've got a model train set.
I guarantee you it would be Ted Cruz's favorite film.
Yeah, Ted Cruz, I just really relate to the character. I don't know why.
He's quoting lines from it at every campaign stop. Oh, and another thing that happened, I guess we could file this under Chapo press clips, but Matt, you were featured in a local newspaper. You were interviewed as an expert on Harambe.
It's a magazine. Like all of these shitty towns that are outside of the metropole of New York, they all have their own glossy.
It's like the New Yorker,
New York
but for
magazine,
Cincinnati.
Basically. Well, more like New York Mag. Every city has one, and it's usually just called, like, the city's name. Like, there was one in Milwaukee. There's one in... and they're just usually called, like, Milwaukee Magazine or Cincinnati Magazine. And the one in Cincinnati is, yeah, it's called the Cincinnati Magazine. And they hired Susan Shepherd, who's an excellent journalist, to write an article about sort of Harambe's afterlife as a meme.
after he got ventilated here at the Cincinnati Zoo. And she called me up, and I think her reasoning was basically that, like, I am the only, like, tweeter of note in the entire city of Cincinnati.
That it's is really true.
It's like, it's me and then no one else. I am the only one. And like, everybody else, every other account from Cincinnati is, like, either Black Twitter or just, like, psychotic Trump Twitter. Like, those are the two choices. So I sort of stand alone as the, as I guess, the Cincinnati correspondent for weird Twitter. And so,
so what was your, what was your take on
well,
the immortal afterlife?
I had a little
of
bit of actual I had a little bit of actual eyewitness testimony, because I actually saw Harambe, like, maybe
Holy
a year
shit.
Before he died. Yeah, I went to the zoo last year, sometime in I think it was like early 2015, for an event for the University of Cincinnati, and we went to the gorilla enclosure and we saw a number of gorillas, and Harambe was one of them. And what I told Susan was, like, when I saw him, I didn't know he'd be a star. He just looked like a gorilla, you know? I've seen him before, I'll see him again. He didn't have any kind of, like, star quality, you know? Like, the way that some actors in their early roles, you can look at them and be like, oh, that guy's going to be huge. I didn't get that with Harambe.
Well, he was kind of...
And then she just asked me, like, what do you think about it? Like, what's your theory on it? That was basically it. And I gave her a couple of my pet ideas about Harambe, one of which is that Harambe was the way for people to make jokes about mass casualty death events without actually joking about dead people. Because if you'll notice it, there were not a lot of Harambe jokes in the immediate aftermath of his death. Like, for the 2 or 3 weeks right after Harambe died, it was really like a 3 weeks or 4 weeks later that people started doing Harambe jokes, which just so happened to be when the Pulse shooting happened in Orlando. And nobody wanted to joke about 50 people getting machine gunned at a nightclub. But, hey, here's this ape who got shot. We can direct our perverse desire to joke about mass death onto this ape.
Now, Matt, what do you make of the competing theory that the jokes about Harambe... Yeah, yeah, that it's a way to deflect. It's a way to laugh at black people, basically.
That's the way I do it. I'm like
what I like about that woke formulation is that it still relies on the trope that black people are like apes.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. It's true of all ultra wokeness. Like, all ultra wokeness basically bends toward Dixiecrat ideology of the 1950s. Like, the way that they're all basically segregationists and anti-miscegenationists who think that there should be no interracial relationships. They
but the
also
way I've seen it,
the idea that black people are apes.
Well, the way I've seen it explained is that the name Harambe is like a non-Anglo name, and it sounds funny, and that's why people are laughing at it. And
well, of course, there's like to say there's a racist connotation to it in an American context is almost redundant. Everything has a racist connotation in the United States. We stew in racism. Air we breathe is racism. Like, we live in a racist society, so, like, obviously, you don't deserve fucking kudos for pointing out the obvious, which is 90% of woke Twitter, by the way, which is just making the most anodyne points about racism in framing of issues and stuff. No shit! It's a fucking white supremacist society. Of course it has that. It's the fact that it's a three-syllable word that scans well. Like, the real burst of Harambe thing, if you go back and look at it, the Harambe tweets that started it were all where you put Harambe in song lyrics. And that's because it's a perfect mix. It's perfectly fits in there.
You're right.
Like,
it's
so
three
many
syllables.
Song lyrics where you can throw Harambe's in there.
It's a funny comedy name. And I honestly, if some sort of ape like murder situation had happened in a similar humorous way, but the ape's name was like Archibald, it would still be
funny.
I wouldn't laugh at that. That's a white name.
We don't even have to do that. Did Cecil the Lion become anywhere near the sensation Harambe did? No, he did not. Because Cecil is boring. That's it. You can't put Cecil in 500 songs, you know? it's simple as that. And that, so it's people wanting to joke about murder. It's just the perfect linguistic fun of the syllables that make up the name Harambe. And then, as I said at the end of the article with her, I think everybody, especially, and this is later, this is after the jokes had kind of turned into the thing where everybody was harassing the zoo Twitter account until they had to close by just talking about Harambe and how they killed him with every tweet. The sense that there's an identification with Harambe. Like, you look at this poor ape who did not ask to be born, found himself in an enclosure, a world he didn't understand, acting out of instinct, not malice, and then being killed for it. I think all of us can relate to that in some way or another.
Absolutely.
Wow. Anyway, I was laughing at it because it is a foreign name. I wasn't even aware that it was in a zoo until yesterday. I was excited. I was like, oh, we're all laughing at names from other countries, and we get to be racist. So that's what I was doing. But wow, I have learned a lot. Learned a lot right now.
When I saw that you were in the local press, Cincinnati Magazine, of course in my head it translated to the Cincinnati newspaper, and I just had like a vision of like old school journalism with like the hat with like a press ticket in it, and they're like, it's coming over the wires now from the AP Cincinnati Bureau. Headline reads, Cincinnati Oaf talks about Cincinnati Ape.
Do you think that Cincinnati...
X-ray, read all about it.
Famous Cincinnati Oaf talks about the famous Cincinnati ape incident.
Do you think that Cincinnati Magazine has like their version of Jonathan Chait? Just like a horny Cincinnati guy who's always tweeting at other Cincinnati reporters.
And there's also a Cincinnati Andrew Sullivan who really despairs for the discourse.
Well, he was really into Harambe.
Well, like totally charting skull shapes. The Cincinnati Andrew Sullivan has a Harambe skull, and he's trying to compare it to like historical black skulls to make a point in an epic article that he's going to publish.
It's not race. It's not racism. It's just science.
If there's science, it's not racist. That is science.
Yeah.
Well, this is a good segue. You brought up Jonathan Chait. I saw he had a great article just yesterday titled Obamacare is great. How come nobody knows it? Or why is it was like, what the fuck? How did he set it up? It was like, Obamacare is a political triumph, but like a policy triumph, but a political failure. Why more people don't love this amazing, life-changing reform? And it's like, so fucking tired of this guy.
Holy
so fucking
fuck.
Sick of him.
Yeah, no, the thing is that there's two parts to that. One is just denying his premise. For most people, it sucks. They're forced to buy insurance that they will never be able to afford to use.
And if should they ever need to use it, it probably won't cover what's wrong with them in the first place.
And even if it did, in order to afford the premiums, people are taking policies that have deductibles that are more than they could afford to ever spend on healthcare in a year, which means they can never use it. Which means that they're literally just giving money to an insurance company, and the insurance company will never have to worry about that person ever seeking a claim or anything. It's just free money for an insurance company with the IRS basically coercing the transaction. It's fucking awful. I mean, there are parts to it that are unambiguously good. Like, Medicaid expansion is good. And why? Because there's no fucking strings attached. You don't have to go to a goddamn website and, become a fucking hacker to try to figure out how to pick the right plan. They just tell you, you're covered now. And that's it. That's all it ever should have been. And that is why, he's bemoaning why it's a political failure. That's because modern left neoliberal policy is all about making this shit invisible to people so that they don't know what they're getting out of it. And as Rick Perlstein has talked about a lot, that's one of the reasons that Democrats end up fucking themselves over. The reason they held Congress for 40 years after enacting Social Security is because Social Security was right in your fucking face. They could say to you, you didn't used to have money when you were old. Now you do. Thank Democrats. And they fucking did. Now it's, you didn't used to be able to log onto a website and negotiate between 15 different providers to pick a platinum or gold or zinc plan and apply a fucking formula for subsidy that's going to change depending on your income, so you might end up having to retroactively owe money or have a higher premium. Holy shit, thank you so much. Their whole obsession with this like wonkish a detail-oriented stuff ends up fucking them in the ass because it ends up becoming just another insufferable bureaucratic hurdle for people to jump as opposed to just a fucking good thing in their life, like former, like the old New Deal model was.
I'm looking up this thing that Ezra Klein wrote about Obamacare and how fun the exchanges are when it came out. But hold on, let me find it. Felix, you go ahead.
Fuck you, you fucking nerd.
Yeah, I mean, I have long waited for something that combines something I need, which is healthcare, with something that is fun, which is when I call Comcast when my cable is fucked up. And it's sort of like playing a video game, but a really fun video game. My favorite video games are called Train Table Simulations, where you get to schedule the trains, and it's a lot going on, very complex. It's like that, but it determines whether I will go bankrupt if I go to the hospital or not. So it's like very high stakes, and if you win, you only pay 20% of your income on healthcare. But if you lose, you go bankrupt and you lose the kids. So I don't really see why people are complaining. It's a policy success.
The video game thing is a good comparison because, yes, all of these spurging wonks are jerking off over, Train Table Simulator or, Civilization 6 expansion pack or whatever. But that's not the games that normal people play. Like, if it was more like Angry Birds, where you just slingshotted a bird into a bunch of pigs and then it said, you have health care, people would fucking love it.
I want to say this. Look, here is my advice to you if you are a freelancer like me or like you guys. Don't get... The health insurance you're going to get on an exchange is probably going to suck shit, so just don't do it. Go to the ER. Never pay it. Keep all your money in cash. Don't pay the tax penalty because they can't force you to. They can't enforce it in a criminal court. Just fuck them. Don't do it. That is sincerely my advice to people. Just don't do it. Well, don't do it and owe tons of money and never pay. That is 100.
That's the thing.
I'm not joking. That's really my advice.
No, well, you're right in that, and I just found this out and it blew my mind. There's no criminal enforcement.
Yeah.
On the tax penalty. If you don't pay the tax penalty, it's not like if you don't pay your regular taxes and you can be go to jail or something. And now you've got assholes like fucking Matt Iglesias who, in the face of the appearance of the crumbling of Obamacare, saying, actually, it needs stiffer penalties. Instead of saying it should just be fucking Medicare for all. I mean, you have a Republican Congress. Even though Trump appears to be collapsing, we're likely, because of gerrymandering and such, to have a Republican Congress going forward. No changes to Obamacare are likely to come. There's not going to be anything because it's going to be gridlock until we all die. Why the fuck would you set your sights on increased penalties for non-compliance instead of saying Medicare for fucking all? A thing that people might actually rally around, a thing that people can get their head around and might get excited about and might show up for the fucking polls to vote on in an off-year election.
I would pay a graduated rate way more money per month if everyone got Medicare. As it stands now, and it is going to be a compromise, the compromise increased penalty is that Matt Iglesias dot ats you if you don't pay your penalty. And he's like, do better. Oh, really? You are the reason that this system is not working. You know, as it is, I urge non-participation to everybody. Make all of them look like shit. Don't go crazy. Keep all your money in cash. Don't let them have it. Keep your money offshore. I don't care. Put it in Bitcoin. Something. Just don't participate. You really have no reason to. Fuck these people.
Fuck. I can't find the Ezra Klein thing, but it was some piece where he was talking about...
No, yeah, I remember what you're talking about.
How fun it was to log on to the healthcare exchanges.
Because it literally is a fucking game to these assholes.
Talk about the neoliberal subject. Jesus Christ.
Constantly. Always looking for a bargain. Never ceasing. You're a fucking shark. You can never sleep. You always have to be bargaining and comparing and arbitraging until you die. Holy fuck, that sounds like a goddamn... That's a fucking heaven on Earth.
Inconceivable to, the Ezra Kleins of the world is that, I don't want to spend my time, looking at forms and, spreadsheets and graphs.
No, nobody
fucking,
does,
like,
except
I,
for these...
I don't want to think about that
except
shit.
Except for every dork government, because they all love that shit. Because they all jerk off while choking themselves with their fucking lanyards.
Like, I just want to, like, if I need to go to the hospital, like, if I get hit by a car or, like, break an arm or have a heart attack or something like that, I want to be able to go to the hospital, stay overnight, and then get a bill for, like, a couple hundred dollars.
Yeah.
Like, and, that's it. Like, that's that's what I want from healthcare. I don't want to think about, like, you know, premiums and, like, insurance and fucking, you know, like, putting all, every piece of data into a big chart that will spit out, like, the 15 competitive plans that can, you know, I can buy on the on an open exchange. It's like, fuck that. I just want to pay to go to the hospital and not go bankrupt because I got sick.
All these guys want recognition for how smart they are. They're all still in middle school, and they're all waiting for a fucking gold star. Like, that's what it all boils down to. And that's why... That's why they're so fixated on the idea of meritocracy, because then they get rewarded not because of accident of birth or whatever, which is actually what happened, but because of some innate virtue of themselves. I mean, that's why I wanted to talk about this, and it didn't occur to me until now, that insane Ezra Klein thing he wrote about how Hillary's debate performances are the greatest in the history of modern
politics. Holy.
Yeah, that was just last week. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He talks about how, like, she masterfully destroyed Trump, as opposed to what really happened, which is that Trump is a fucking coked out, lazy shithead who has no impulse control and just did what he does every other time a microphone is in front of him.
Ezra's whole
Hillary destroys guy who's masturbating in front of her. In the greatest performance of logic ever.
His whole thesis in that article is that, like, it doesn't seem like Hillary's putting on a masterful performance, but that's the strategy. It doesn't seem like she's doing this, but in every debate, she just laid back and did the rope-a-dope, and Trump walked right into her trap. And it's like, dude, this guy—he's a retard with no emotional control or, like, just any impulse control whatsoever. Like, he would have done that for anyone.
If you watched a single one of his speeches on the campaign trail, you would have expected what he did during those debates. And the difference is, in front of a bunch of bang idiotic Republican primary voters, that plays well.
They loved it.
In close up with actual swing voters who determine elections, it looks bad. Even now, at this late date, when it feels like we should be living in a thing where, like, the two candidates do family double dare, we still cling to outmoded notions of discourse, and so he appeared like he wasn't really presidential, because he never has been. She didn't have to do shit. That's what he's like. But for these guys like Klein, like, I'm talking about meritocracy and their fixation on it. Like, the idea that a guy like Trump could have been tied with Hillary going into the first debate, and then basically undo himself through his own bad impulse control, laziness, and sexual pathology is unacceptable. They can't just give it to Hillary by default, as Homer Simpson said, the two sweetest words in the English language. She has to have had a hand in it, because if she doesn't, then she is not worthy of the office. And if they're going to fucking jerk themselves off to how awesome she is for the next 8 years, which they're going to do, they have to feel that she's worth it. And that means she had to have been the architect of her victory, even though all she had to do was show up. And he was going to do that. They can't accept that. They can't accept that world where it came to Trump to self-destruct and not to Hillary to make him self-destruct. That is a world they can't live in. They cannot visualize it. They cannot conceive of it, because then their fucking cherished notions of meritocracy collapse into the joke that they actually fucking are.
Well, I don't like to talk about Ezra Klein too much or hear about him. He, like, just makes me mad. Like, Ezra Klein can't fuck his wife unless she wears a corsage that looks like an Excel spreadsheet. It's the only way he can get it up and fuck his wife into installments that come quarterly. I can't fucking stand him. He just sums up everything I hate about that type of person. And, let's just say, without me getting myself in trouble, I would like to watch Ezra Star in this series of short films that has been produced in Iraq and Syria. That's all. That's all. So, yeah. That's it.
Oh, Christ. Well, moving on again. Okay, let's talk about Joe Walsh's musket.
Family court
Fuck
hero,
yeah.
Joe Walsh.
Family court hero, Joe Walsh.
You know how I was saying that you should just, like, not pay for Obamacare? Joe Walsh did that, but with having kids. They're like, Joe, you have to pay. And he's like, no, fuck you. he's a hero. He's like the opposite of Carl Daigle.
I don't know. This is a. I mean, this goes back into our theme of like the mutually reinforcing circle jerk of the alt-right and the libs that are so terrified of them and think that, you know, Trump is not going to concede the election and Joe Walsh is going to grab his musket the day after and there's going to be violence in the streets.
It's this sad mutually reinforcing circle where the libs need these fucking people to be a threat to like. Enliven their existence and this, you know, this like democracy in America is a totally exhausted animal. It's fucking, it's a goddamn dying donkey on the side of the road, but they can't accept that. There has to still be vitality to it. They have to still be defending some sort of cherished traditions. And so they have to take seriously the idle threats of fucking couch bound chuds like fucking Joe Walsh and Matt Forney. Fucking forehead. Like he's gonna take to the fucking streets. He's gonna waddle his barrel shaped torso into the fucking woods to become a fucking insurgent. Yeah, this is the most none serious, of them are gonna do that.
This is the most serious election of our life. Matt Forney, a man who cannot walk four blocks without requiring oxygen, is going to somehow replicate the Mahdi army.
Wait a second. I saw this earlier this week and I didn't know whether to believe it or not. Someone said that Matt Forney is 24 years old.
28. He's 28.
Oh, he's 28?
That's still insane. Yeah.
That's still
he looks like
horrible.
A solid 52 years old.
It's still horrible.
Yeah, he uncuffed his thyroid.
He's older looking
that's
than Ken
looks like
Bone.
That.
He looks older than Ken Bone by a solid decade.
Okay. Now Matt, you've popularized the Forney leg. This
Forney
thing
leg,
where
baby.
Which is
everybody
okay for
do the Forney leg.
And by the way, everyone, it's okay for Matt to do this because he's also differently abled.
That's true. It's like I walk with a limp and I have like a natural limp. You watch me walk and you're like, oh, that guy he's got a leg injury. Like people always ask me, oh, what happened to your leg? When he walks, it's like, is that a human being or some sort of creature walking on stilts in a human suit?
Why are you wearing that stupid bunny suit?
Like it's not a human gait.
No, I think did you say it looks like a video game glitch?
Yeah. It's like the Unreal Engine fucking up.
Yeah, Unreal is the word.
But okay, his
as I have said, his body shape is best described as non-Euclidean.
You know what it's like?
Yo, but like his head shape is so odd.
Oh my
too,
god!
Though. Like it's just. It's so lumpen. Like
he was actually born and immediately plopped into one of those boxes that you use the claw to retrieve it from in the bowling alley. And his parents had to like wean him out of it, and that's why he looks that way. They're like, we almost got our boy out.
We did the last debate, and like when we did our retrospective talk, and we talked about what we'd seen, Trump not agreeing to concede if he loses, we barely fucking mentioned that. But the next day, every fucking pants-wetting lib in the press was just extra wetting their pants about the horror, about the violation of norms that Trump had committed by not saying that he would accept the election.
Because like from a comedy perspective, that was more boring than when they were talking about like balancing the budget or whatever.
Yeah. But for these people, it's basically it's the most horrifying thing they've ever seen in their life. Because what if it stirs up guys like Matt Forney and Joe Walsh to take the street? I'm not worried about that. No one's worried about that. They're his supporters are old white people with joint and hip problems. They're not doing shit. They're gonna fuck. Like somebody pointed out today that even the young bloods of the Trump supporters, the alt-right assholes. Like, they all have these avatars. Some of them are anime characters. Some of them are members of the Nazi Party. Some of them are their actual pictures. And they all have Photoshopped Make America Great Again hats on. Not a single one of these motherfuckers could be bothered to fucking shell out $20 for the actual hat. They all had the fucking Photoshop it. Because this entire campaign is this virtual reality jerk by these idiots who think that being online and fucking sending Pepes and oven memes is an actual campaign. They wouldn't be able to fucking take to the streets. They don't know what the streets look like.
Dude,
they would be unnerved by
concrete under
their feet. Yeah.
Most of them were autistic teenagers.
Yeah, they're so used to the shag carpeting in their parents' house that if they got on concrete, they would get confused and disoriented. So that goes for them. And then all of the older supporters are all fucking guys who, you know, they've got 15 goddamn hypertension medications that they have to fulfill every 15 hours. They're not taken to the streets. Nobody's taken to the streets. America, nobody on either side, nobody on the left or right, nobody's taken to the fucking streets. We're paralyzed. We are just consumed with media. We live in a mediated spectacle. That's all we know. That's all we care about. We don't know what it would even mean to take to the streets. None of us.
Well,
settle down.
Well, speaking of oven memes, following up on a story we just did the other day, fucking David French was on NPR talking to Terry Gross about his family getting put in meme ovens.
I heard that today.
You listened to that?
That was so funny. I didn't know it was coming. I just turned on the radio and I was like,
Spike Jones is being interviewed.
Spike Jones is talking to him. Yeah. He must have a new movie.
A new movie coming out.
Oh, shit. No, it's David French.
I'm Ira Glass, and this is This Modern Cuck.
I'm just imagining Spike Jones. It's like you turn on the radio and you're like, Spike Jones is really getting into it. And he's like, in my latest movie, I think it's like it's all virtual, but like it's like in an oven. And what if there were like Nazis, but like they were just telling me that like other men were fucking my wife? it's called Her Part Two.
By the way, I should point out that someone DM'd me today to say that they had listened to the Daily Showa, which is the podcast we ripped off.
That's crazy.
The flagship alt-right podcast. It's been around for 10 years and that I heard about 2 weeks ago because it's the most irrelevant thing on earth. But anyway, he was telling me that they, in their most recent episode, were making fun of David French for being anxious about his wife's emails when he was in Iraq. When did we do that exactly?
We did that three months ago, easily.
So
we did
who the fuck is
ago.
Ripping off who?
What a bunch of cucks.
No, we're ripping...
We cut your ass, Pepe. Fuck off.
Suck my dick.
We're ripping them off in that we've borrowed the people talking format for a podcast.
To be fair...
What a bunch of fucking pussies. Yeah, unbelievable.
For them, like, talking to other people is a novel concept. Like, no one has done this before. This is amazing. I have never heard of
that. Those guys had to jam turkey basters full of code red into their femoral arteries to get the energy up to talk to each other on the fucking phone.
Yeah, we had one guy in the Chapo account was like, my name is Thomas Stryker of the Daily Show. Since you're ripping us off, would you willing to host me for a debate? And I was like, yeah, that's exactly what people want to hear. Us debating skull science with some autistic teenager for fucking 45 minutes. Fuck off.
I'm Thomas Stryker. That is like a name that Arnold would have in like a late 80s movie that would betray his Austrian heritage. I'm a cool Nazi. My mom doesn't make me do anything.
I can stay out as late as I want. I mean, I don't. I don't leave the house, but I could.
Yeah, they're just like, it's like we found out the alt-right people are kind of like the woke Twitter. Like, they're just all agoraphobic, retarded people. Because they also had the alt-right Twitter also had a thing this week where they're like, listen up, ladies. We respect women.
Oh, yeah.
It's so fucking
that.
Cool.
I saw that. Like, they're like, yeah. there were guys being like, well, there are certainly some of us with our heads on straight who support you and stand behind you,
my
Aryan queen.
What a bunch of fucking neurotic pussies, all of them. Jesus.
And it's like, yes.
Shut the fuck up and play Steam games.
I will gladly interview the mentally ill on this show, but it's got to be Molly Klein first, then you.
Woo!
Yeah, Molly she's Klein, the front girl. Of the fucking line, people.
Yeah,
you get in line behind
her. Line, buddy.
Crapo Bieberkopf.
Can we talk about this for a second? Because I got virtually nothing productive done yesterday because I fell into a K-hole of talking to her. Just asking her to come on the show, and it just like it's like a Russian doll. It just like it never ends. It just gets weirder and weirder. Like you
see,
just
that's,
keep
that's
going.
The thing. Just, that's I have never added her, and I never will, just because I am afraid of just like my brain just breaking. I feel like I would be like the psychiatrist who talks to Rorschach in The Watchmen.
Yo, Matt. Oh my God, Matt, you're joking, but like honestly, I sort of felt that way. Like I after about 15 back and forths, I was just like, wait a second, should we be paying our guests? They are helping our commodify our product, and no, seriously,
I can't believe you got gaslit, but damn, Molly Klein, holy shit. Not letting you talk to her anymore.
I can't do it. I can't risk it. I'm too susceptible. I can't.
But only a gamer could talk to her.
But Molly actually transcribes our shows now.
That is nice of her.
Yes, she does. It's amazing. She is a more assiduous listener than any other person amongst our fans. No one listens closer.
Nobody takes the show more seriously than she does.
Nobody takes it more seriously than her.
And if you did, and if you didn't see it,
because she can only take things seriously. She literally doesn't understand comedy. It's mind blowing.
What is it meant to imply when Benny Hill has a pie land in his lap and chases a sexy woman?
No, for those of you who missed it, I asked her to come on the show because obviously she's our biggest fan. And it got into this weird thing where she was like asking us to give her $5,000 or give $5,000 to her friend, Charlie Brown X, a revolutionary who's in trouble right now.
That was my favorite storyline of Phoenix is when Charlie Brown joined the Nation of Islam.
And then I haggled her down to $3,000.
Good work.
But it was her whole thing of like, she said like, I'll do the show. Why would I do the show for free? And I was like, well, we've never paid anyone else to do it. And she was like, well, I'll only work for free if you work for free. And I'll do it for free if you offset by, like, giving me, like, you know, an hour. She thinks we make, like, $5,000 a day or something like
that.
I
didn't mean to tell you guys that. I do.
Well, that's because, as people have pointed out, she has no conception of money because she's a rich heiress who's never worked a day in her life.
And she was like, why don't you get this? She was like, it's very simple. And I kept saying to her, no, Molly, I do get it. I'm just not giving you any money. And then, like, she did this thing where she, like, capped, like, a bunch of our interactions. It was just one reply from me and then six of hers. And my reply was like, seriously, though, we'd love to have you on the show. And then she coded all of that saying, I'm really amazed at how histrionic they are. Like, they can't take any criticism. They really go to pieces. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, you only did one tweet, and it was to ask her cordially to come on the show. She's like, wow, triggered much?
I want to do a science experiment where I have Molly Klein watch, like, silent movies where pianos fall on guys' heads and they, cartoons where wolves get horny for dancing girls and have her interpret it because she doesn't know what jokes are.
I did see she had a great tweet the other day where she was like, the, quote, feminist classic Jane Eyre is, you know, crypto clerking for bouge imperial race murder.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's take that,
Jane
Charlotte
Eyre.
Fuck you, Charlotte Bronte.
Even that is like, that's too coherent. I understand the point being made there. She has to speak in her own like crypto language.
She rules.
That's exactly why I want her to come on the show or one of her minions or something, because I feel like there's probably a coherent, like, left critique of Chapo. Not necessarily one that I would agree with, but at least one that I could hear. But I feel like in their preferred medium, no, I just don't understand what the fuck they're talking about. So I'm hoping in conversation, like, it would come out.
Twitter is the worst possible mechanism for the kind of deep reading that she's trying to do. And yet that's her only fucking outlet. So of course she's been driven mad and it turned and created this weird personal language, because that's Twitter defeats understanding. Twitter at every level defeats dialogue. And to think two things: A, that you are a vital member of the vanguard of the Marxist-Leninist revolution in the world, and two, that you're a component of it is entirely to tweet. Those two things would drive anyone insane because they are absolutely incompatible beliefs. But the one thing I am absolutely certain is going to happen, and that I will feel like my life has been fulfilled when it does, is when she has a anti-Chapo left forum panel next year, like she did for
Hell
Sizzic.
Yeah. Fuck yeah. Oh my God.
Fuck yeah.
I will
no, Matt,
fucking
we were
lose it.
We were talking about this yesterday, and you made a joke about it that was very funny, but like there is a better than 50% chance that that will happen.
Yeah,
like and we are the new Zizek in the sort of attic.
Oh, we have
of
totally
her mind.
Displaced Hell Zizek yeah. in her mind as the psyop Pied Piper leading good leftists away from
into fascism.
That's us.
I agree with her. I think we should stop. I think this should be our last episode, and I feel like the future is fought out between heiresses who are inventing a new dialect that's sort of like Lower English mixed with Saxon mixed with other things, and anxious
mixed with Burroughs cut up technique.
Yeah, and then anxious gamers. Those are like it is the battlefield of the future. I wonder, like, do you ever wonder about that? Like, it's like a fantasy matchup where, you know, you've done that where it's like, oh, what would happen if the Taliban fought some samurais? Well, I'm like, what if Molly Klein fought like the like autistic alt-right gamers? That would be who would get tired first?
Oh, who, God,
I'd have to give it to
like
a girl,
two
Molly.
Bots. It would be like when two bots get into an argument and go forever.
I'm going to say Molly wins. She just, like, never slows down. She rules.
Molly would definitely win, I think.
Yeah.
I'd have to bet on her.
She's been doing it for longer.
She has more metal than the alt-right Nazis.
They would have no idea what the fuck is going on.
I was thinking about this the other day. Like, we should make fun of them more, but, like, A, they're nobodies, but, like, B, I was thinking, like, the term anime Nazi, like, accurately describes everything you are and believe in, it's sort of like it's superfluous at that point. Exactly what that's who they are. They're anime Nazis, people.
They're Nazis
that love anime. Like, they just they love Japanese cartoons and National Socialism and I'm sorry, human biodiversity. What a fucking gem that is. I love HBD.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I love that, like, when that was first invented, you know, these fucking dipshits thought that they had got some, like, silver bullet. Oh, now I can be racist and everyone will agree with me because I use the word for it.
As much as they, like, cherish their alienation from society, they also transparently crave the recognition of the broader culture. Like, they just want a pat on the head to be like, yes, human biodiversity is a real scientific discipline. It's definitely on par with chemistry.
They want to
prove
so
that's
bad.
What renders their entire approach so tragically sad is that they have created this identity as outsiders, but, like, everything they do is this parasitic response to a broader culture. They would have nothing if they didn't have that to react to. They have no positive fucking agenda or ability or knowledge or
anything.
Wait a
second, though.
All they
have
is the ability to shit all over things and then hopefully get a response from a hyperventilating Tumblr tween.
Hold on a second, though. I'm gonna put this out there. I'm issuing a challenge. If you want to prove us wrong and debate human biodiversity with us, here's what you do. Find all of the articles that support your thesis. All of them. Like, literally anything. Print them out. Print them out and then transcribe them by hand onto a new, like, leaves of paper. Just handwritten, handwrite, and contain all the notes from all the printed articles. Transfer them over again. Copy them in triplicate. Put them into little paper, make them all into little paper airplanes and shove them in your fucking pee hole. Cram them all in your fucking urethra and then piss it into your toilet and then hopefully it will reach us here in New York City. Your little missives.
I want to hear them out personally. I think I'm actually going to join them.
Wait a second.
Them.
This one is like a little obscure. We don't need to actually keep it for the show, but did you guys see the thing this week? It just happened. This guy, Stephen Den Best, who just died.
Yeah, speaking of
Tony
anime
did a whole,
Nazis,
he was the first proto-anime Nazi. He was
really?
The proto-anime Nazi. But the thing is, he wasn't like alt-right. He was much more of like the neocon war blogger thing. What's his name? It's Tony Now did a wonderful obituary for him. But he was a guy like, again, he's one of these figures that like, totally obscure now, but like if you were sort of unlucky enough to have been online in the sort of early aughts and the kind of genesis of the political blogosphere, it's sort of like hard to overstate how much this guy was like pimped and just like by guys like Instapundit and all like the sort of early right wing bloggers as like, this guy's a genius. He's a genius. This is he is the people like him are going to overturn the mainstream media. And this dude was like literally a man going his own way. He was a proto man going his own way and proto anime hentai blogger. But like he was like the John the Baptist
for basically every pathology yeah. in reactionary like Twitter that exists.
Long
now.
Screeds supporting the Iraq War and like all this pseudo fake military analysis and history that focuses on like where he has like the name of like every piece of military hardware down that like to, as a substitute for his lack of knowledge of anything else. But he was like really, really heavily promoted by like the National Review and a lot of these fucking assholes. And then, like, he just sort of, like, stopped political blogging around 2004 and dedicated his entire time to running a site that did almost nothing else but just review anime and post pictures of prepubescent cartoon girls that he would, like, be like, I really like the panty drawing on this one.
Yeah.
That is... Yeah,
it's amazing.
That's the logical conclusion to conservatism, is just, like... imagined febophilia. Like, but, okay, febophilia.
So in Jim Garrity of the National Review wrote his obituary the other day, and he was like, his voice was sorely missed when he turned in 2004 when he turned his attention to cartoons. And it was just like, wow, that sentence is doing a lot of work covering up. He devoted his attention to cartoons. And then like
one way to put it.
And then literally that his original like political blog is no more. But like the one he was doing up until last week is still up there. And it's just literally him being like reviewing anime shows. And it's like pros. Lots of cute girls, double pros, lots of bathing scenes.
Oh my god. Oh my god.
And then so like one of the things he got really famous for, there was like this was his call to arms, again, shared heavily by Instapundit. was something called like the death of Anglo women or something like that, and it was
Anglo women are an endangered species.
Yes, Anglo women are an endangered species, and it right was this on. Long heartfelt screed about how he's been single for like the last 9 years. The last relationship he's been in was 8 years ago. He hasn't dated a single person. He doesn't feel like a man. He doesn't feel like a human being. And then he goes to a Vegas strip club, and he was like, for the first time in like a decade, I felt like a man again. These women treated me like men. Oh. They were kind. They were polite. They even gave me a hug and kiss on the cheek after I spent $400.
Dude. Oh,
those two things have nothing to do with each other.
Holy fuck.
And it was like, this is the perfect, like the guy who thinks the stripper is really into him. It's like the saddest shit ever, but I feel no sympathy.
I feel nothing for him ever.
Dead. I mean, shit on his
grave. And honestly,
fuck
it's
him.
Better for everyone that he's dead. Him most of all.
The world is like nothing bad comes out of him being dead. So, wow. Rest in peace, buddy. Good luck in the afterlife.
Okay, dude. We can cut from this or from later in the show, but I really want to talk about this because this early era of right blogging. Because then when this guy died, it reminded me of this other dude who was like a twin star to Stephen DeBest. He is still alive, I believe. Kim Dutoit. And he wrote another one of these, like, you know...
The pussification of the American man!
The pussification of the American man. This was, like, you know, one of these things that was, like, shared over and over again. This was the early, like I said, the early aught war blogger call to arms. This is a guy who stopped blogging because his readership couldn't raise enough money to pay for his gout treatment and lap band surgery for his entire family.
Think about that.
Think about that.
Fuck me, dude. Holy shit.
And like, yo, I think Tony or like Jim Jorps or someone dug up a picture of him, and he's like, he's reclining on something, and he's one of those guys like his stomach is so large that like it's like coming out of his giant shirt. He has like he has that like under boob of stomach that's coming out when he's lying on his side. And, like, he wrote these incredibly angry, like, he was like, we have to exterminate the Muslim cockroaches for the name of Western civilization. And then, like, you know, insta-dork would be like, interesting, read the whole thing. And I just love the idea that, like, the stoic defender of Western civilization is a guy who wheezes after getting out of bed, and he's like, oh, I didn't die from sleep apnea. Another great day.
Imagine if Charles Martel had staph infection in between his tits and stomach.
I don't even know if he's still alive. I hope he's not.
He's probably fucking
dead.
I hope he's dead. Too, actually. This is the first I'm hearing of him.
I hope he is dead.
Seriously.
He got gouted.
Seriously, look up the essay. I'm calling it an essay, which is hilarious.
More of a diatribe,
look
right?
Look up the missive, the pussification of the Western male.
Yeah.
Which is weird because, like, the more obese you get, the more your, like, cock goes back into your body because, you know, if anyone's being pussified, yeah.
And there's something sort of feminine about having, like, double D tits.
A little bit.
In traditional, you know, gender norms or whatever, that's kind of feminine to have giant jugs.
You're an idiot, Matt. In ancient Sparta, it was considered very masculine to have malactation and to be 500 pounds.
I just, like, you know, I wish the people that follow us on Twitter could have been around. Like, there is this whole constellation of absolute weirdos that are now lost to time.
I was so immersed in that shit. And they're
okay, do you remember Bill Whittle? Bill Whittle? He was another guy that Instapundit promoted heavily, who had the idea of creating something called Ejectia that was sort of going to be like Second Life for conservatives that would become real life. And it would become like, it was sort of like pseudo seasteading, that kind of like Peter Thiel thing where he was like, we'll create like an Acadia of the mind and then it will be in reality. And then, like, after a couple months, he's like, oh God, fuck, I wish I had in front of me. It was like, sadly, due to financial concerns, my dreams of creating a new society will have to be put on hold for now. I still sincerely believe in it. And he was like, oh, he used the example of ancient Sparta.
They love Sparta.
But this is all before GoFundMe or any of that shit. It was literally just it was shared in hyperlink on, like, basically all on Instapundit. And he had this thing where he was like, in his, the classic novel Gates of Fire, you know, was that guy Pressfield who wrote that? He was like, does this sound attractive to you? Living in a city state of men of virtue? It sounds awesome to me. Why not now?
Yeah. A bunch of men of virtue and slaves. I mean, it's like there are so many levels of horseshit to that fetish because you've got the first level of the fact that if these guys had been born in ancient Sparta, they would have, as soon as they
would have
been
left
their moms,
die from exposure
instantly
because they were absolute total rejects. They would never have fit into their model of physical perfection. I mean, for a second. So, like, the very premise is hilarious, and then just like the absolute noxiousness of them fetishizing a slave oligarchy.
Yeah, Sparta was the absolute worst of the classical world.
Yeah. Imagine a society built on the same principles as a bathhouse. I need $8 million to build this dream.
No, but in that they use the example of the Battle of Thermopylae as an example in which Western civilization turned back savagery. And he was like, if it had not been for them, all of, like, reading, writing, science, reason would have been lost. And it's like, dude, the Persian Empire of that era was like.
They had writing, they had reading, they had all that shit.
They had all of it and, like, far less child fucking.
it would be like you pay a tax.
It would have been fine. Like maybe the Persians would have been like, can you guys fuck less kids? Which is kind of cultural Marxism if you think about it.
It's cultural relativism, actually.
Yeah,
But, you know, again, like these proto-war bloggers and their fetish for ancient Sparta, this is also what's funny about the alt-right's obsession with the Third Reich. Because, I mean, they would certainly be sterilized in any sort of normal national...
Or
sent to be cannon fodder in the Eastern Front.
Yeah.
Oh, no, my God.
They would have been either... They would have given him a Pander Shrike and sent him to get run over by a fucking T-38, or they would have just euthanized them.
Like, those for being nonverbal by the age of 11.
it's like, this will not do. He cannot participate with the strength through joy. We're going to have to take him to a special school. You'll never be able to talk to him again, but trust me, it will be a very special school.
And also, the anime thing. I mean, degenerate art, if ever there was.
Oh, God. Yes.
I mean, yes, the Japanese were honorary Aryans, but I can't believe that they would have countenanced that shit. The tentacles and all that, they would have been like, no.
No, but like Japan at the height of their military empire would never have stood for anime. Definitely not.
No, neither of them. Yeah. All of that shit would have been just exterminated. Because because their whole thing was that they did not want art that would like undermine their ability to create an organic, vigorous social unit.
And social body,
right, a social body. What is more deleterious to social cohesion and active participation in society
than spurging
in your fucking
morons
basement and jerking off to anime babes for 40 hours in a row?
Oh my God, if we put this out, so many people are going to be like, debate me, coward.
Our memes.
Now, did you see that one guy that said told Sam Chris, he was like, I have $1.7 million in the bank, and you would couldn't survive in a forest. And then I think Sam replied, I also have $1 million and we'll meet you in the forest.
he also told him it was all Jew fiat
money.
Yeah, that's all Jew fiat currency, so I actually own you. And then he decided to be like, Oh, you're good at the banter. I want to be friends with you. It's like, fuck you, buddy. Nobody wants to talk to you on Earth. No one wants to talk to you.
You can't even make friends when people can't see your hideous body and face. Like, you have every advantage, and you can't even do it then. All you can do is be friends with like other people with social anxiety and clinical depression.
I mean, I guess like to round out this discussion, someone angrily said of us, you know, these guys are just they're just assholes. They're nothing. As soon as the election is over, they're going to go back to their obscure podcast, just jacking off for each other. And I want to say you're not wrong. But after the election, you're going to go back to your even more obscure podcast, jacking off to even more obscure pornography. So
yeah,
at least
fair is fair.
At least I'm jacking off with my friends.
Yeah, let's
take
that. Let's sign off and have a solid bait sesh.
Yeah,
what do you say?
Yeah, let's go for it, boys.
All right,
let's
on each other's
camp. Yes, Matt, camming. Start camming. Let's start camming right now. Cheers, everybody.
Peace.
Bye bye.
Hello, I'm Jared Taylor with American Renaissance. What's the alt-right or alternative right? Millions of people heard the term for the first time when Hillary Clinton mentioned it in a campaign ad last week. She said it's full of terrible people, and she tried to connect it to Donald Trump. So the mainstream media are now full of stories explaining the alt-right. Even a Japanese newspaper interviewed me the other day about the Aruto Raito. As a long-standing member of the alt-right, this is how I see it. We are a broad dissident movement that includes many different websites, organizations, and viewpoints. Some members hold distinctive positions on sex roles, trade and free markets, forms of government, and foreign policy. But they all agree on one thing. Equality is a dangerous myth. The alt-right is united in rejecting the current dogma that all races are equal. Races are different. They differ in average levels of intelligence. They do not build identical societies. And there is no reason to think non-whites can maintain Western civilization, the civilization that whites created. And most people prefer the culture created by their own race and prefer to be around people like themselves. Blacks, Hispanics, and Asians express this preference all the time, and everyone thinks it's fun.
It's only whites who are thought to be immoral if they openly prefer the culture, society, and people of Europe. Now, if you're shocked by what I've said so far, you're not part of the alt-right. Not yet. But just wait. We're growing all the time. The alt-right is eager to have the honest dialogue on race that former Attorney General Eric Holder and others claim to want. Well, they're not sincere. They want to exclude everyone who disagrees with them. Honest dialogue is meaningless if everyone already agrees. Hillary Clinton and the press have tried to tie the alt-right to Alex Jones and to various people associated with Breitbart.com and to Donald Trump himself. This is dishonest. None of these people has ever taken up the cause of white identity or talked openly about race and IQ. We may be sympathetic to people such as Steve Bannon of Breitbart and Donald Trump because of their views on immigration, but they have never spoken up for explicitly white interests. If you want to learn more about the alt-right, the biological reality of race, or the importance of white racial consciousness, please visit our website, American Renaissance, at www.amran.com, or any of the other sites that I've mentioned. It could be your first step into a world where things finally make sense, where there are real solutions to problems liberal orthodoxy can't even understand, much less solve. Join us in the struggle for a better, brighter future for our country and for our people.